From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Hey, welcome to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. You might hear in my voice, I've got a little Christmas cold here, but Merry Christmas, everyone. I hope everyone had a wonderful celebration of the birth of Christ and got to spend time with family and friends and to enjoy all the trappings of the big day. But now we head forward to the new year. This is the last show of this year. 2023 has been a great year. And starting off next year, January 1st, we've got the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God. That's the big feast day starting the year off. And appropriately, we're going to be talking about two Marian titles on today's program. We'll be joined by Father Edward Looney, author of How They Love Mary. He'll be talking to us about Our Lady of Banu from Belgium, one of the most modern Marian apparitions in history that have been approved by the Church. We'll also be talking with Dr. Robert Festigi, professor of Mariology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary. He'll be talking to us about the very first Marian apparition in history, the apparition to St. James in Our Lady of the Pillar. And that's Zaragoza in Spain, and perhaps as early as 40 AD. And check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every week on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The one coming up on January 3rd is about Father Patrick Peyton. He's one of my favorite future American saints. It's a look at the charismatic priest who pioneered the use of radio and television to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in his singular mission. So check that one out, They Might Be Saints. He's also featured in my book, They Might Be Saints, which is available at EWTNRC.com. Later in the show, we're going to be taking a look at the 365 Days with Mary project for today, Our Lady of the Miracle from Milano in Italy in the year 1485. And Blessed Giovanni Maria Boccardo, from 1848 to 1913, he lived in Italy, and he's the Might Be Saint of the Day. And the question of the week, can there be any true medical miracles in our world today with our advanced technology and treatments? It's a tough one. I'll answer that one in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We had a very interesting story that popped up this past week. It was a headline being the lost tornado baby found by the grace of God. And the story goes that there was this four-month-old infant who narrowly escaped death when a tornado ripped through his home and swept him away. So last week, a tornado ripped through the town of Clarksville, Tennessee, killing six people and leaving dozens injured. And in its wake, a tiny baby was left in the most unlikely of circumstances. Sandy Moore and her family were in their mobile home when the tornado struck Montgomery County. She was inside with her fiancé and their one-year-old son and their four-month-old baby boy. As the tornado approached, the mom explained to Nashville's news station how something in me just told me to run and jump on top of my eldest son. And the moment I jumped on him, the walls collapsed. That was a quote. And so while the couple's eldest son was safe, the tornado swept up the bassinet where the baby was sleeping. And as the mother shared, the roof came off first. The tip of the tornado came down and picked up the bassinet with our baby, and he was the first thing to go up. How scary. And her fiancé, in an attempt to grab hold of the bassinet, was pulled into the tornado's grasp too. And Moore, her fiancé, and the eldest child were mainly unharmed, yet the whereabouts of their little one was unknown, with the mother of two fearing the worst. The couple went to look for their youngest child and came across him cradled in a tree that had fallen during the tornado. As Moore shared, quote, I thought he was dead. I was pretty sure he was dead, and we weren't going to find him, but here he was, and that's by the grace of God, end quote. The family lost all their possessions in the tornado, and a GoFundMe page was set up to help them to get back on their feet. And on that page, Moore's sister, Caitlin, explained more details about her tiny nephew's incredible survival story. She said, Lord, the four-month-old had to have his ear glued from a cut. We told him that he looked like he was placed on a tree gently, like an angel guided him safely to that spot. And the loving aunt pointed out, the disaster has affected more than just this family, so I'd like to extend my thoughts and prayers to everyone affected. So a very sad story of the tornado somewhat of a miraculous story that baby survived in that tree. So you can check that one out. I posted it to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, where I post news items and miracle stories from each and every day of the year. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we talk about the questions that we have on our minds, and people who know me, my friends, know I love trivia, and you might find me on a bar on a random night playing Catholic Pub Trivia, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. And so we have a question from last week. It was an easy one. I gave you an easy one in preparation for Christmas. I know you have a lot on your minds out there. But so last week, the question was, what is the nearest Marian solemnity before Christmas? We said the one after Christmas is Mary, Mother of God. But what's the one right before Christmas? And that is, of course, the feast day of the Immaculate Conception on December 8th. Lots of people wrote in with that answer. So thanks, everybody who wrote in. Now, this week, we're starting with January 1st, coming right up around the corner. It'll be 2024. I can't believe it. But the big feast day is the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, as I just mentioned, on January 1st. But you might know that in the past, this was called the Feast of the Circumcision of the Lord, or the Octave of Christmas. And so the question for this week is, in what year did January 1st start being called the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, rather than those other two names? Again, the question is, in what year did January 1st start being called the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, rather than those other names? So if you think you know the answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ew10.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com. Send me a message, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Edward Looney, author of How They Loved Mary, about Our Lady of Banu. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill and the Miracle Hunter. We have right around the corner, the beginning of next year, January 1st, the Solemnity of Mary, the Mother of God. And so along those lines today, we're going to be talking about two Marian titles. The first is Our Lady of Banu in Belgium, and this is one of the very modern Marian apparitions in history, and the story goes that in a garden behind the Beko's family cottage, Mary is said to have appeared to Mariette Beko at age 11 eight different times, and she called herself the Virgin of the Poor, and Mary promised to intercede for the poor, sick, and suffering. And after 14 years of investigation, these apparitions were actually officially approved by the Catholic Church in 1949. And it was so believable that in a show of Vatican support in 1985, Pope John Paul II went to Banu and had an audience with Mariette at the sacristy. So really a highly approved Marian apparition and a very modern one. And so most people don't know this. We featured this on an episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter. But for people who haven't seen that episode, perhaps they haven't even heard of Our Lady of Banu. Well, we're so excited to be joined today by Father Edward Looney. He's the author of numerous Catholic books, including How They Love Mary. Welcome back to the show today, Father Edward.
It's great to be with you, Michael, and thanks for the invitation. I've been there in Belgium, just as you have been, and you know, it's just a very beautiful spot for prayer, and to be, of course, anywhere where Our Lady has appeared is always a great blessing.
Absolutely. And if, for those people who may not ever make it to Belgium to see this spot of Banu, how would you describe the shrine from your visit there?
Yeah, you know, it was many years ago now. It was probably back 2015 that I was there. So, my remembrance and recollection, of course, is that, well, I had gone to Borang, and then I went to Banu, and so, you know, kind of the stark difference between the two. So, like, Borang was kind of more simpler, in a sense. There wasn't as much, you know, kind of, yeah, there was just something very different. Like, Borang was all about the message. Banu was, you know, you go there, you can find the spring, there's water there, you walk around, there's lots of different chapels, there's a big chapel or a hall as well. So there's a lot to explore, I guess. You know, getting out of the car in Bahrain is like, I don't know if I'm in the right spot. Getting out in the car in Banu is, I know I'm at a Catholic destination. So that was my experience.
Yeah, I think the same. I think the Bahrain Shrine is perhaps the coldest and smallest Marian shrine for an approved apparition that I've ever come across. And like you say, you don't quite know you're in the spot of such a place. But we're talking today about Our Lady of Banu, who's known as the Virgin of the Poor. And so let's just kind of paint the story for people. Who was Mariette Bako, and what did she see?
Yeah, so Mariette Bako, she is this young girl, and happens right after the apparitions in Bahrain. So Bahrain finishes January 3rd, I think, 1933, and then you have January 15th. And so this girl is standing basically at her living room window looking outside, and she sees this beautiful woman. That's how she described her. And she said, she's beautiful. She's smiling at me. Now, her mother said, it's a witch. You know, it's not the Blessed Virgin. Her father was actually a member of the Communist Party, I believe. And so there wasn't a lot of faith in the home. So there wasn't kind of this acceptance of even entertaining the notion that this was a religious apparition or experience that Mariette was having.
And what about Mariette herself? Was she a very religious child?
No, she wasn't. In fact, she really struggled in her catechism classes. She was not going to be making her first communion. In a lot of sense, I would say that Banu really reminds us of Our Lady of Lourdes. And, you know, I have a statue in my, I have a collection of Mary statues from all my travels. Maybe you've done something similar.
Yeah,
but
you and me both, strangely. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, if you put Our Lady of Lourdes right next to a statue of Our Lady of Banu, you're going to be like, is this Our Lady of Lourdes? And there's so many different similarities between the two apparitions. And in fact, there is a February 11th apparition. But the reason I bring that up is, you know, Bernadette herself in this Lourdes apparition, you know, Our Lady really prepared her for First Holy Communion. And that's the story of Mariette Bako, too, is that Our Lady comes and she begins to take her faith more seriously as a result of these messages. And she kind of has this renewed fervor for her religious ed or her catechism classes and goes to the priest, who then becomes amazed by the faith of this young girl.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's pretty interesting is that you mentioned the family of Mariette, the mother and the father. They weren't all that pious, and they weren't inclined to believe her. But in all stories of Marian apparitions, nobody believes the child claiming to see visions of Mary. So that's nothing new. But one of the remarkable things is the father, he has a little bit of a turnaround.
Yeah, so he eventually, of course, does have kind of this conversion experience, as you would say. And there have been so many fruits of these different apparitions, and especially there, too, the fact that there is this spring of water. People take the water. People are blessed with the water. They experience graces. And there are cases in these Marian apparitions. I believe I was told that Lucia de los Santos, the visionary from Fatima, her parents never believed that she saw Our Lady. Like, they went to the grave doubting that their daughter saw the Blessed Mother. So to have Mariette's family have this experience of a conversion and acceptance and leave kind of their former way of life and embrace kind of this message, this is really what Marian apparitions do. They bring and spark conversion. They bring us back to the sacraments.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Father Edward Looney, author of numerous Catholic books, including How They Love Mary, about Our Lady of Banu ahead of that feast day on January 15th. As is the case, the Catholic Church often waits a little bit of time before they give an approval to acclaimed Marian apparition. Talk a little bit about the process of what the Church did to investigate and what kind of judgment they came out with.
Yeah, so of course, how Banu was evaluated is a lot different than how Marian apparitions today are evaluated. Today, there's a guiding document from 1978 from the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith that helps bishops in that process. But it began at the local level investigating Banu. I remember reading some documentation, in fact, after, you know, maybe a pastoral letter that the bishop at the time had written in the early 1930s. I came across this in archival research, but basically he was giving his credence and his belief to the apparition. So there is kind of that process where you look at the messages. Now, this isn't an apparition where there are tomes of messages that you would have to go through. They're very simple messages, much like foraying, very simple phrases that Our Lady spoke. So very easy to look, is there anything contrary to faith? You look at the life of the visionary. I know some people have raised concern about the life of Mariette, but I've never really come across that. Someone mentioned that to me. You know, they had questions or concerns about her and why the church, you know, validated, et cetera. But obviously, they took into consideration all of those factors at that time when they made that judgment about the apparition.
Yeah, it was a 14-year investigation, so it was quite a thorough investigation, giving that official approval of a constate supernaturalitate, established as supernatural, which is the highest level of approval coming from the local bishop, who's the first and foremost authority in the cases of Marian apparitions. And then we see Pope John Paul II visiting the shrine there years later.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful thing to have, you know, to have the papal visit. And I remember seeing pictures of, you know, in Benu of that. I saw them in Borang too. And so that the Holy Father himself was a pilgrim. So, you know, interesting thing about Borang, Our Lady said, I've come so people may come on pilgrimage. And then really just, I mean, it's an hour away. There's another pilgrimage spot. And so she came twice for that very reason.
Yeah, I think that Belgium was the epicenter of Marian apparitions for a couple years there. And you might have come across this as well, Father, is that after those two apparitions, much like Lourdes, where Bernadette claimed visions of Mary, there were many copycat visionaries around France, also in Belgium in the decade afterwards. You see the highest number of reported Marian apparitions in Belgium, other people claiming they saw Mary as well.
Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised by that, especially because you have these two right on the heels of each other. In fact, that's what people thought when Mariette began claiming to have visions. They're like, you're just imitating the girls and boys from Borang. But over time, of course, the realization would be, no, this is legitimate. This is real. And, you know, I think it's just a beautiful little story, the fact that Our Lady comes. There's always the smile, so I think that's a beautiful image to think of, Mary smiling at the visionary. But it's really this invitation, like Mary invites her to follow her. Mary leads her to the spring of water. So it's just this very warm apparition in that sense of Mary inviting. And so just as she did that for Mariette, she does that for pilgrims today. Whether you visit literally or if you visit just reading about it, looking at images, whatever, you can make a spiritual visit too.
And I encourage people to check out my program. This is a little plug here for Explore with the Miracle Hunter. I did get to go there and film there, and we did some beautiful recreations of these events. So for people who want to learn more about the apparitions of Our Lady of Banu, check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter Banu, and I go through all those details on that program. And we've been talking today with Father Edward Looney, How They Love Mary. He's the author of that book and numerous other Catholic books. And if we had to sort of look at Banu, Our Lady calling herself the Virgin of the Poor, what would you say is the takeaway message or the reason for the visit in this case?
Yeah, I think, of course, it's always healing. There's that healing component, the fact that she says, I've come to reserve the spring for the, I think she says, for the healing of the nations. So there is that characteristic. People do claim healings when they go there. I think, too, you know, at this time, war was going to be breaking out and happening around Belgium and whatnot. And so there's just something about having a little sanctuary of peace to go to and to have a little piece of heaven in that spot. You know, in the sixth apparition, she said, believe in me and I will believe in you. Pray very much. And that was kind of the mantra in both Borang and Banu. It was pray very much, pray always. You know, So it's a renewed message to prayer and an invitation to pray more, too. So those are just some of the things that immediately come to mind.
Yeah, very well put. We've been talking today with Father Edward Looney. Father, thank you so much for breaking down this apparition, this little-known Marian apparition, Our Lady of Venue in Belgium. And like we say, many people will not get to go there. I remember I led a pilgrimage there, and the pilgrimage guide, in fact, said, you know, I've led people to all the Marian shrines around, and this is only my second time in 20 years going there. So this is a kind of a rare place to visit. So we're grateful to you, Father Edward Looney, for telling us about what we'd see there and the meaning of the place and the message. And for people who want to find out more about you, about your books and your other activities, what's the best place for people to go?
Yeah, so I'm on social media at Fr. Edward Looney, and you can find me Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those places. There's a website, edwardlooney.com. And I just put in a little plug, too. Anna Nuzzo has a beautiful song, Virgin of the Poor. You can basically search her name on YouTube, and people can listen to this song that she wrote about this Marian apparition as well. I know I enjoy listening to that song.
Yeah, absolutely. I am quite familiar with that as well, so I encourage people to check that one out. Well, thank you so much, Father Edward Looney, author of How They Love Mary, for talking to us again about Marian apparitions, and today about Our Lady of Venue with a feast day coming up on January 15th. Thank you so much, Father, for joining us on today's program.
Well, blessings to you and to all.
God bless. That was Father Edward Looney. Check out his book, How They Love Mary, and also his website, edwardlooney.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Can there be such a thing as modern medical miracles with all the advances in medicine and advanced technology that is used to treat patients? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And people invite me to speak at different places, parishes, conferences, around the country. Maybe I give 10 or 15 talks a year at these different places, and I love giving the talk, of course, but my favorite part is the question and answer, hearing what people are thinking about in the world of miracles. I do my best to answer them. People can invite me to speak if you go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and there's a contact tab there, and you can find about my speaking there. And I speak about Eucharistic miracles a lot these days, lining up with the Eucharistic revival. So contact me there to have me speak at your parish or event. We have a good question coming in this week from Mark. Mark says, Dear Miracle Hunter, can there be such a thing as a modern medical miracle with all the advances in medicine and advanced technology that is used to treat patients? Thank you. That's a great question from Mark. And I think it's an interesting one because the assumption is that the point of that question is that with all the treatment that goes on and all this advanced treatment, can there ever be a medical miracle? And I think when we talk about the Lambertini criteria, especially, we're talking about a serious illness not liable to go in its own. It must be an instantaneous, complete, and lasting cure, and there can be no medical treatment that relates to the cure. So it's that last puzzle piece, I think, that they're pointing to here, with no medical treatment that relates to the cure. So the cases that are examined by Rome at the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, where they look at intercessory miracles of people being considered for sainthood. The cases that are considered are those times before somebody has gone to the doctor and when afterwards, and where the treatment has not worked. We can look at the case of Mother Teresa, the cure from encephalitis of the man from Brazil. And in that case, this occurred where the wife and the entire parish prayed to Mother Teresa for her intercession in advance of a surgery or treatment. And the man went in for one more brain scan, and before the surgery even happened, they said they saw that this condition of encephalitis had gone away. So this was before any medical treatment was given. And then we see other cases where chemotherapy has been applied in the case of cancer patients, or other major treatments have happened and nothing has really worked, and we still see the cure from that illness. These are also cases in our modern technology where we have medicine being applied, but it being ineffective. And we consider these to be modern medical miracles. So thank you so much, Mark, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, or just go to my website at miraclehunter.com, and you can ask me a question that way. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the days. It lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian feast day for each and every day of the calendar year. And it lines up to feast days and miracles, buildings of basilicas, etc., from around the world. And so for today's date, we've got Our Lady of the Miracle from Milano in Italy in the year 1485. And the story goes that on the morning of December 30th, 1485, Don Giovanni Pietro Porro was celebrating Mass before the holy image when the veil covering the picture was lifted and the Madonna, in a flash of light, raised the baby to the faithful. This miraculous appearance, which was confirmed by the rigorous investigation of the ecclesiastical canon, was a sign of special favor from the Madonna in what was a very sad year due to the spread of plague. By the will of the city authorities and the entire people of the shrine was erected worthy of the protectress of Milan, called by the people Our Lady of Miracles, and the sanctuary of San Celso became the center of devotion to Our Lady of the Milanese. In 1576, the plague struck Milan again, and after a solemn procession, the terrible scourge ended. And that is Our Lady of the Miracle from Milan in Italy in the year 1485. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website, 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book or download the free app from the iOS App Store, Marian Calendar, 365 Days with Mary. Let's take a look at sainthood news. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood. And this lines up with my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And my book, They Might Be Saints, which is available from EWTNRC.com. So we always like to keep you up to date about the saints coming down the pipeline. And earlier this month, during an audience granted by the Pope to Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, the Pope authorized the same Dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the martyrdom of the servants of God, Luigi Carrara, Giovanni Diodone, professed priests of the Pious Society of St. Francis Xavier for foreign missions, Vittorio Facin, professed religious of the same Pious Society, and Albert Jobert, diocesan priest, killed out of hatred for the faith on November 28, 1964, in Baraka and Fizi, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And according to the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints website, they said, Luigi Carrara and Giovanni Didone, professed priests of the Pious Society of St. Francis Xavier for foreign missions, Vittorio Facin, professed religious of the same society, and Albert Jobert, diocesan priest, were killed in Odium Fidei, Latin for hatred of the faith. The events occurred in the atheist and anti-religious context characterized by a magical, superstitious background that animated the Simba, and the Christian religion had been violently opposed, with churches looted, tabernacles and sacred images desecrated, and there had been episodes of outrage and destruction of religious symbols. And so these servants of God are now blessed as a result of this declaration of martyrdom. With one miracle, they will become saints, as recognized by Rome. So that is the latest sainthood news coming down the pipeline. Now let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a person on the path to sainthood, a servant of God, venerable or blessed, before all they have all their miracles and are declared a saint by Rome. We honor them on their day, so that's their feast day or their death anniversary. For today, we've got December 30th, Blessed Giovanni Maria Boccardo from Italy, 1848 to 1913 is when he lived. And Blessed Giovanni was born on November 20th, 1848, in Cabianca in Moncalieri in Turin in Italy, and he was the eldest of 10 children born to Gasparo Boccardo and Giuseppina Malerba, and he was a pious boy. The whole family was pious, and he was baptized at 1 day of age. Three of his brothers became priests, one of them, Blessed Luigi Boccardo, and he studied with the Barnabites, graduated from their high school in 1864, and then the seminary, and he was ordained in 1871 in the Archdiocese of Turin, and he was drawn to religious life, but was assigned to work in a seminary, first teaching and then being the spiritual director of young seminarians in Chieri in Italy, and then in Turin, and he received a doctorate in theology in 1877, and an honorary canon of the Church of Santa Maria della Scala in Chieri. He was a friend of St. John Bosco, St. Leonard Moraldo, and Blessed Joseph Alamano. It looks like he kept good company there, parish priest in Pancalieri in 1882, where he spent the rest of his life as the beloved pastor there, caring especially for the sick and poor, filling in at other parishes, ensuring religious education of children, maintaining a prison ministry. And he worked with the sick during the cholera epidemic in 1884, and it made him think that there needed to be better medical care for the poor, and so he founded a hospice for the impoverished sick in 1884. He founded the Poor Daughters of St. Cajetan with a mission to care for the poor sick, the long-term sick, sick priests, the elderly, and the neglected, and their work continues today in Italy, Brazil, Benin, and Argentina. In 1911, Father Giovanni was stricken with a form of paralysis that eventually led to him reluctantly giving up all the areas of his ministry in his final 2 years. His private writings on matters spiritual runs as large as 44 volumes. And he died on December 30th, 1913, in Moncalieri in Italy, of natural causes. And he was declared venerable by Pope John Paul II on April 6th, 1998. And he was beatified also by Pope John Paul II in 1998, in May, so the very next month. And the beatification miracle involved the complete healing from cancer of an 80-year-old, Lina Alves de Oliveira de Sao Paulo, Brazil, in 1968. And so that is Blessed Giovanni Maria Boccardo. With one more miracle, he will be called Saint Giovanni. And for more information on those people on the path to sainthood, you can check out TheyMightBeSaints.com. You can also check out my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And this week, on January 3rd, we've got a look at the charismatic priest who pioneered the use of radio and television to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in his singular mission. And of course, that's Father Patrick Peyton. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Robert Festigi about the apparition to St. James, Our Lady of the Pillar. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People know that I'm very interested in Marian apparitions, and if you go to my website, miraclehunter.com, you can find as many as 2,500 apparitions cataloged on my website all throughout Christian history, even up to this modern day, and dating back to an apparition that was said to happen in the year 40, right after the death of Christ and received by St. James. People will often ask that question, what is the very first Marian apparition in history? And the answer to that trivia question is this apparition to St. James. And it's there's a beautiful basilica there, and it's still celebrated with Many women being named Pilar in Spain, actually. It's quite a common first name because of the celebration of this first Marian apparition in history. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by Dr. Robert Festigi, professor of Mariology and other topics at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, and co-author of the book with me, Virgin, Mother, and Queen from Ave Maria Press. We're so excited to welcome back to the program Dr. Robert Festigi.
My pleasure to be here, Michael, and Merry Christmas, and Happy Feast of St. John the Apostle, whose brother is St. James, who, according to Catholic tradition, is the first recipient, St. James, one of the sons of thunder, who received an apparition, according to tradition, in the year 40 AD in what is now Zaragoza, Spain. And it's a great testimony. And actually, what is unusual about this, it really was an apparition when the Blessed Mother was still alive on earth.
That's right.
It was really a bilocation. And it really is the major a shrine to Our Lady in Spain, and it is considered to be the oldest church or a location of a church in honor of Our Lady.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing, and as I mentioned, it's still celebrated and honored today, despite being such an ancient, you might say, Marian apparition or event. And let's talk a little bit about the circumstances. The Apostle James the Greater, why was he in Spain anyway, in Zaragoza?
Well, of course, the apostles were sent by our Lord to preach the good news to the ends of the earth, you know, and so he was there in Spain, and he was preaching on the banks of the Ebro River in what was then called Caesarea Augusta, but then the name Zaragoza comes from Caesarea Augusta. You could see how it would come from that. And he was not having a great success in preaching to the pagans there, and he thought that his mission was destined to be a failure, and he was quite depressed. And so he was deep in prayer when he witnessed this apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who was standing atop a pagan pillar or standing stone, and he saw her, and she appeared to him, and she gave him the pillar and a statue of her with the infant Jesus, and saying, "This place is to be my house, and this image and column shall be the title and altar of the temple that you shall build, and the people of this land will honor greatly my son Jesus." And then he builds a chapel, but he was told by the Blessed Mother to return to Jerusalem, where he was martyred, really the first apostle to suffer martyrdom in the year 44 A.D., So it's quite a remarkable story, and there have been miracles associated with it. He's also very important for Spain because his relics, as you know, there in his gravesite was rediscovered by a hermit around the year 800, and the hermit found the burial site after noticing an unusual star formation, and so there's the cathedral there called Compostela, Santiago de Compostela, right, the great place of pilgrimage. But that's about a 7.5-hour drive from Zaragoza. So where Our Lady appeared to St. James is in Zaragoza, where his burial site is in Compostela, the starry field in Galicia in Spain.
Amazing. We're talking today with Dr. Robert Festigi from the Sacred Heart Major Seminary, talking to us about the very first apparition in history, or by location, as we discussed, to St. James. She's known as Our Lady of the Pillar. And if you go to that beautiful basilica in Zaragoza, they do actually still have what they present as that pillar of jasper, the material jasper, that people can actually go and venerate. You can kneel in front of it and touch it. So they do have what they consider traditionally to be this spot where the Virgin Mary appeared. It's absolutely amazing. And now, this apparition of Our Lady of the Pillar, it's still recognized in Spain. It's a popular devotion there as well. But mystics throughout the years have also referenced this event as well.
Oh yes, that's very. I'm very glad you brought it up. Well, one of the great mystics of Spain is Venerable Maria of Ágreda, and actually, her cause for beatification is somewhat put on hold while her writings are studied. But there was a conference on her in November at the Antonianum in Rome, and Pope Francis sent a message speaking very highly of her holiness. But she was a 17th century Franciscan nun, and she confirms this the truth through her mystical revelation. And she said when Our Lady appeared with many angels who were singing songs of joy, and the Blessed Mother consoled St. James, who was despondent after his lack of success in his mission. And she said, "My son James, the most high and mighty God of heaven has chosen this place that you may consecrate and dedicate here a temple and house of prayer, where under the invocation of my name, he wishes to be adored and served, and all the faithful who seek my intercession will receive the graces they ask if they have true faith and devotion. And in the name of my son, I promise them great favors and blessings." And, you know, as you know, there was the great miracle of a boy who was amputated, had a leg amputated, and going to Our Lady of Pilar, he had his leg restored miraculously. So there have been many miracles and conversions associated with Our Lady of the Pillar, and also the 19th century mystic who is beatified, Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich, also confirmed the same story of Our Lady of the Pillar. I know there are skeptics there saying, well, there's not a consistent tradition since the 13th century and so on. But I think what we have to realize is, Spain was under, Iberia was under the control of the Muslims for centuries. So it was hard to visit these shrines then. But popes have confirmed this devotion. As you well know, that Pope Callistus III issued a bull in 1456 specifically naming the Our Lady of the Pilar and encouraged pilgrimages to this oldest Marian shrine. In 1723, Pope Innocent III, of all the places that Spain offers for the veneration of the devout, the most illustrious is doubtless the sanctuary consecrated to God under the invocation of the Blessed Virgin, under the title of Our Lady of the Pillar at Zaragoza. There was a canonical coronation by Pope St. Pius X on May 20th, 1905, and Pope Pius XII declared her the patroness of the Hispanic world. Huh. And Pope St. John Paul II visited the Basilica November 6, 1982, and with great emotion removed his zucchetto from his head and left it in a beautiful rosary as a remembrance of his visit. So popes have gone there, supported the devotion, and this we have to be to see how great the devotion is, and especially in the Hispanic world. She's very Our Lady of Pilar is very prominent, even in the Philippines, which of course was founded. The Europeans who went to the Philippines were Spanish.
That's right,
and so she's a great patroness of the Philippines, too.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Dr. Robert Vestigi from Sacred Heart Major Seminary and co-author of the book Virgin Mother and Queen with me from Ave Maria Press. And as we know, for modern Marian apparitions, the investigation of the local bishop is very important. But in the early days of the church, there was no investigative process that was established for Marian apparitions and other types of miracles. And so when we see the attention of popes who go to visit these places and give it their attention and recognition, that's as significant as anything to show the support of the church for a given devotion. And we've been talking about Our Lady of the Pillar. And if we were to sort of extrapolate out from the story where Mary is appearing and comforting St. James and encouraging him, what can we take away in our understanding of the devotion of Our Lady of the Pillar?
Yes, it's a very good question. I've thought about this, and you know, he felt like a failure in Spain and then was martyred in Jerusalem. But the fact that there was a shrine put there early on to Our Lady, she oversaw the evangelization of Iberia, what is today Spain and Portugal. And there's great devotion to Our Lady in Iberia. And so it really shows, similar to Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico, the role that the Blessed Virgin Mary plays in evangelization. She's been called by several popes the star of evangelization and the star of the new evangelization. In other words, she's like a guiding star who leads the way, and that she really, as the spiritual mother of the world and the mother of the church, assists the evangelizers today in spreading the faith. And so it shows how important the Blessed Virgin Mary is in the work of evangelization, and one of her titles is Queen of the Apostles. So she was already, during her earthly life, assisting the Apostle James and consoling him, and look how the faith spread in Spain later on with great devotion to Our Lady. So this, I think, this apparition in 40 AD was an early indication of the success that would follow, but in God's time. But that she there standing on the pillar of what was a pagan site shows that she will help lead the people of that region to the adoration of her son.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with Dr. Robert Festigi from the Sacred Heart Major Seminary about the very first apparition in history, that St. James the Great, Our Lady of the Pillar, there in Zaragoza, Spain. And Dr. Robert, when we talk about your work and the projects that you have ahead, I know you have a book coming out perhaps in February. Tell us a little bit about what you've been working on.
Oh, yes. Well, I work in Mariology, I work together with Dr. Mark Miravalle. We're trying to spread a deeper knowledge of Mary and co-redemption, her role in the work of redemption and the mediation of grace. So we are involved with an online journal called Ecce Mater Tua, which comes out twice a year. But I also co-edited a book of essays defending Humanae Vitae and Catholic sexual morality. And this was based on a conference in Rome in December 2022, and a few of the essays had to be translated and so on. But Dr. Matthew Levering is the co-editor, along with me, of this book, which will be published by Sapientia Press of Ave Maria University and distributed by Catholic University of America Press. And it will be called Humanae Vitae and Catholic Sexual Morality. And because some people are questioning this teaching of Humanae Vitae, saying it's subject to change and so on. But the essays in this book argue, no, this is a definitive teaching of the Church. We have to manifest the wisdom of that great encyclical of St. Paul VI, Humanae Vitae, from 1968. So we have some outstanding authors, Monsignor Livio Malina, Professor John Finnis, Professor Michal Wallstein, and others.
So it is, I think, a good book coming at this time when there's great confusion in dealing with Catholic sexual morality.
Well, thank you for that. And the other book that I've mentioned is Virgin, Mother, and Queen from Ave Maria Press, where we cover the top 10 most highly approved Marian apparitions in church history. And that was a co-authored book with Dr. Robert Vestigi and I. So check that one out as well. That's available from EWTNRC.com. And I'd like to thank you today, Dr. Robert Vestigi, for joining us today to talk about this first apparition, the great apparition to St. James, Our Lady of Pilar. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Oh, well, thank you, Michael, and may God bless your ongoing great work, because you are the miracle hunter, and God is the one who performs the miracles.
But you
are hunting them and manifesting them to the world. So God bless you in your work.
Thank you so much. And that was Dr. Robert Vestigi talking to us about the apparition to St. James, Our Lady of the Pilar. And that's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Edward Looney, talking to us about Our Lady of Banu, and Dr. Robert Vestigi talking to us about Our Lady of Pilar. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Happy New Year, everyone.